something that exciting about that is looking at these additional health benefits now. That's the really exciting part. And that's not just the protein, it's the oil as well. So it's another thing we don't even necessarily think about is, yes, we're producing the larvae and we're extracting or manufacturing protein-based products from that, but we also get the oil. And that can be used as a feed source, even in cosmeceuticals, soap making. There's a number of things there. And then it's not just that as well. Forgetting the larvae itself, their manure, in the industry, it's called frass. It's a strange word. I've never heard that term before.
That's great. That's great. It's a new word for the day.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Yeah. Insect castings, you know, a lot of different ways to describe it. That is a brilliant fertilizer product.
We're going through something absolutely historic.
Technologies across the board are growing exponentially.
It's a disruption that's going to completely redefine the way businesses compete.
In the next decade, we're going to lose 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies.
The exponential growth of computing is continuing.
AI is nowhere near its full potential.
Whether you like it or not, that the future cannot be stopped by anyone.
Hi there, everybody. This is Mark Verbenkov, and welcome back to the Future Tech and Foresight podcast. This is episode number 140, and I am recording this from El Tunco, El Salvador. So this is going to be the first podcast that I am recording while doing a remote working trip. Needless to say, you're probably only going to be hearing this. The video cannot be recorded because of the low Wi-Fi quality here. Just a interesting little hurdle while doing this remote working trip, but that's the point of it. But very luckily, I recorded the interview with my guest before I left Canada, so the video is still going to be up on YouTube and up on the website if you are so inclined to check that out. But today, we're going to be looking back at the insect farming or insect agriculture topic. This is, as I mentioned in one of the previous episodes, I think something that has obviously attracted a lot of attention over the last couple of years and one of the topics that I've wanted to cover substantially more in depth. So I'm really happy to have another guest on to touch on some similar but obviously a lot of different topics within the greater theme of insect agriculture. And I think that for all of us that have been paying attention to this industry and, I guess, food security in general, the insect agriculture trend or movement or, I guess, burgeoning industry, however you want to define it, has been really influential for kind of improving food sustainability, food security. But also there's a lot of, like, interesting, innovative aspects that I won't spoil it, but we'll get into it in today's episode. But it also kind of brings about new eco-friendly protein sources while tackling, you know, some of the larger issues that people are claiming within this industry, such as climate change and the aforementioned food security, which could be instrumental for food security across the world. But I think, as you'll see in this interview, in the discussion, that's still a couple of years to come. So the main kind of points in today's episode is, so we're not focusing on crickets. Today, it's going to be the black soldier fly. We don't really talk about other insects, as this is kind of the main one that my guest and his company is focused on. But it's interesting nonetheless to kind of dive a little bit deeper into one insect kind of per episode. So, of course, we talk about the environmental sustainability benefits that come around with, reduced water usage and reduced land usage compared to conventional animal agriculture. Some of the kind of challenges to the industry itself, including concerns about, like, toxicity or consumer perceptions, and then also look at some of the solutions, and then look at a little bit of the ethical considerations when it comes to traditional livestock farming and how insect agriculture compares to this, And then, of course, shedding some light on the humane aspects and the kind of potential benefits of transitioning to insect-based protein sources. We do largely focus on the technology that's needed for all of this, as the kind of episode title alludes to. So I won't touch on that here, but we definitely touch on that during the episode. And then, of course, one of my favorite things to look at in all of these episodes is the future outlook. So kind of where the future of insect farming and the whole industry will move towards, the technological advancements that are needed and expected along the kind of industry's trajectory. And then also, you know, some of the social aspects, such as the public acceptance of this new food source and kind of how the food system might become more resilient or, I guess, sustainable as insect protein and insect foods come along. But yeah, there's also a lot of other interesting things in the episode, but kind of without further ado, I'll talk about my guest and then dive right into the interesting discussion. So Martin Pike is my guest today, and he serves as the CEO of Viridian Renewable Technology, where he leverages his extensive background in science and engineering to lead the company's innovative efforts in the insect manufacturing industry. Since the industry's inception in Australia, Martin has been instrumental in developing Viridian's technology and driving the company's mission towards innovation, sustainability, and the exploration of insect-based ingredients as a means to revolutionize feed for pets, plants, and animals in general. This kind of underscores the pivotal role in the industry's growth and the company's success. So I really had an interesting discussion with Martin. I hope that all of you find some benefit at another discussion on insect agriculture and get a little bit more insight as to how this kind of interesting emerging industry and the technologies that are required to have it function are coming about. Great. Well, thanks again, Martin, for coming onto the podcast today. Very much looking Very much looking forward to touching on insect cultivation, insect farming, and specifically what kind of technologies are kind of bringing this industry up, and we'll get into it. What kind of technologies will help scale it out, which I think is an important point here. But to start off, how did you get into insect cultivation or insect farming? And maybe correct me on the proper pronunciation, on the proper jargon for your industry.
Yeah, there's a lot of jargon out there, and everyone's sort of coming up with certain names, and yeah, insect farming. Yeah. It does seem appropriate, but the way we do it, it's almost like vertical farming. So That's often a misconception, is people think we've got like a, I don't know, flies running around the paddock or something, but you know, sort of like a
barn of insects.
Exactly. No, but we just got a, you know, warehouse with, you know, rooms inside the warehouse where they're vertically farmed. But going back to the start of the journey, it all started 7 years ago when we had this opportunity to do this, get involved, and really the spark was we looked at some literature out there, what the sort of inklings of the beginning of the industry overseas, and we realized that there was such potential. You know, insects can do so many things, and there was research to show, okay, they can process these materials or plastics or papers or all of these things. And we actually looked at a variety of different insect species to begin with, to see what they could do. And we settled on the black soldier fly larvae as a powerful nutrient recycler of, basically organic feed products. But they can do everything from manure to some sort of organic green waste and food products, and just a really wide spectrum there. There's so many ways that you can actually harness them. So for us, 7 years ago, we just thought, okay, we just got to solve a few problems, and you know, we can make a really massive change to the world. And you know, it was about joining all of our different interests: engineering, science, biology, business, communications, even into this big beast of a project that took a lot longer than we thought to actually sort out all of those minor issues.
Yeah.
So really, you know, for us, it was a great opportunity to use all of those skills, but genuinely do something good. And that's really the core of what we're doing, is trying to change the world for the better. And you're starting to see now the insect industries develop all around the world. Here in Australia, we've got our own particular sort of niches and perspectives and opportunities. But it really is such an untapped opportunity that people are only just starting to understand what is the true potential there.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. So I think when I hear about insect farming, and I've talked to other people about this as well, they think obviously sustainability, right? So reduced amount of inputs, whether resources or otherwise, food resources or otherwise, to get the same kind of weight in protein or outputs as compared to like cattle, which is a massive, well, not just a polluter, but also just it requires a massive amount of inputs to get a large steak, for instance. So I think sustainability is kind of understood by people. But one of the things in our communication beforehand was food security. Is that, I guess that's tied to this input output of resources. But maybe you could touch on the food security aspect when it comes to cultivating insects, and specifically the black soldier fly.
Mm. So you're absolutely right. You know, the sustainability aspect is really interesting, and we could delve into that. You know, we're not trying to throw stones at any other industry, whether it's meat or vegetable or even, you know, cell-based products or fermented. Let's have them all. You know, let's do the best with all of those. But the reality is, you know, we're reaching the limits of agriculture, be it livestock or, you know, fruit and vegetables, grains. There's only so much resources and land and water available for those things. So with growing populations, with more protein being required, we have to get creative about where that protein comes from. And so with the black soldier fly larvae that we use, we are taking resources that are currently being wasted. So we don't need to create additional inputs to create protein from our products. So the way that we harness them in particular is protein recovery. So we get these materials that are currently being thrown out or not fully used, and we then feed them to the larvae to recover that protein and keep it in the food ecosystem rather than being thrown out where it has that environmental impact as the food decomposes, releasing greenhouse emissions, but just more importantly, wasting those resources. You know, you think about how much energy, resources, effort goes into farming, producing, manufacturing, distributing, and then we just throw it away. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy. So using this process, we prevent that wastage, but also bring back more protein for animals, maybe sometime in the future for humans to consume as well.
Well, maybe on that point. So I'm now educated on crickets, which have a very high protein percentage. What is the protein percentage for the black soldier fly?
Mm. Okay, so this is an interesting one. And I talked before about the skills that we had to engage for this project, and communications was one of them. We often get people talking about, oh, insects, high protein, blah, blah, blah. I'll be honest with you. It's not any higher than any other food product out there. Mm. It's not any, the protein isn't of some substantial quality difference that it's like, oh, wow, amazing. It is just equal to what we've already got. And that's the important thing, is we're not using a protein source that's worse. You know, you're not taking a step backwards. It's not a downgrade. The high quality protein that you enjoy today, be it as a human or an animal or a pet, this is equally high, if not in some aspects greater in quality than those existing ingredients. So then what we're able to do is create a protein source that is, as you say, sustainable. It's equally good quality as a nutrient source. But we're now learning very excitingly that there may be some additional health benefits. But it's that point of the protein quality. People are sort of saying, oh, is it worse than soy meal or fish meal or things like that? And we're saying, yeah, It's fine. there's nothing that exciting about that. It's looking at these additional health benefits now. That's the really exciting part. And that's not just the protein, it's the oil as well. So it's another thing we don't even necessarily think about is, yes, we're producing the larvae and we're extracting or manufacturing protein-based products from that, but we also get the oil. And that can be used as a feed source, even in cosmeceuticals, soap making. There's a number of things there that, yeah. And then it's not just that as well. Forgetting the larvae itself, their manure, in the industry, it's called frass. It's a strange word. I don't know.
I've never heard that term before. That's great. That's a new word for the day.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Yeah. Insect castings, you know, a lot of different ways to describe it. That is a brilliant fertilizer product. And I got to be honest with you, Mark, we don't fully understand what it's doing, but the results are speaking for themselves. And we get people coming to us, customers coming to us saying, hey, I tried it on this, I tried it on that. And we got these astounding results. I almost feel like the biggest imposter syndrome, like finally someone's going to be like, oh, this destroyed our garden or something. But we just keep getting inundated with positive feedback that we didn't even know about. So
so it seems like as you go down this journey, there's more and more benefits that you're kind of, well, I don't know if you discovered this or if it was already kind of in the literature before you started, but it certainly seems to me that maybe in the next couple of years as well, there might be another benefit that you're getting from this kind of insect farming.
Definitely. I mean, that was early on. The literature was very much, I think people say, no worse than. Is this product no worse than fish meal? Or is this, are the results no worse than what you'd expect with a feed made without this protein? And it was sort of ticking a lot of those boxes. But people weren't, yeah, you're right. People weren't thinking, is it better than? And is the great thing about, you know, this industry is it's global at this point. And we need that because there's just so much research to be done. And we can't do it all on our own. But we're getting involved with groups like AgriFutures here in Australia that's starting to do some research projects on the insect industry. We're working with Australia's government-supported science organization called CSIRO. They're doing some really exciting work. And, yes, they're asking those questions, what are the benefits? And in one meeting we had with them recently, they start using words, what they call bioactive compounds, which is anti-inflammatory, anti-aging. I'm like, wow, okay, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it is very, very fascinating. And, you know, previously, there's this compound found in the insect skin called chitin. And yeah, there's nothing that special about it. It's actually, you know, found in shellfish and prawns as well, that sort of hard exoskeleton. And people were actually looking at that previously as a negative thing. They were saying it was, you know, decreasing digestibility. Now people are actually flipping that around on the head and going, okay, yes, it's not, not necessarily easily digestible, but it's actually improving gut flora. So improving the gut health of certainly, you know, domestic animals, dogs and cats.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I'd heard of, chitin before. I'd forgotten the name, but, you mentioned like shellfish. So there were like some concerns of, insect protein, I think being like an allergen, right? But if those people that are already allergic to shellfish don't eat it, then if there's this added benefit of increasing gut flora, which is, as far as I understand, and I'm a bit in a bit of a bubble, but more and more people are realizing the tremendous importance of having a good gut health as it pertains to your overall health. So if that's something that can be benefited from, then maybe there's going to be more uptake of insect protein in the near future. One thing I did want to ask you was, so you mentioned animal protein and animal feed, and sometime in the future you might be shifting towards food for humans. Can you touch on why start with animals? I'm assuming it's easier, but maybe just touch on that as to specifically why.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of potential benefits for humans, but I don't want to sound like some crazy person saying that we've all got to eat bugs.
Yeah.
But they do actually taste really good. So we happily taste test. I mean, honestly, we literally taste test batches because part of what we're producing is high quality, organoleptically acceptable and enjoyable. So taste, smell, texture products for pets, right? Now, when you're feeding your pet, are you thinking about feed conversion ratio and muscle mass gain and, you know, cost? No, you want the pet to enjoy itself, right? So that's why we focus a lot on creating ingredients that are actually irresistible, have this great flavor and smell profile. And again, it's this thing that you can never guess until you've experienced it. When you've opened up a packet of the raw protein or the sort of finished products. So we can produce a product that's palatable for humans, but I think that market's a way off. And yeah, I hope that we get there some stage, because it'd be a great way to keep feeding people. But yeah, as you said, our focus right now is the pets and livestock. The livestock industry is always interested in new ways to increase sustainability in agriculture. The challenge for us right now is the volumes they want are just astronomical.
Yeah.
We need to build about 5 to 10 of our factories to just start producing the volumes that they need. You know, they want that minimum thousands of tons of protein to even just start having that conversation. So that sort of left us in a bind initially, going, well, how do we bridge that gap? And so with pet food, that was our focus. We made that decision a few years ago before there was a lot of evidence to show that it was a good way to go, before there was a lot of pet food brands. And we've been trying to develop that trend here in Australia. So we have a product called One With Everything, which is at the moment just a range of insect protein-based dog treat products. Okay. And we put that into the market to help develop that here, to show consumers and other brands that we might like to supply to that you can make an insect protein dog food product, that the pets love it, that the humans are open to it. And you know, that's worked quite well for us, because now we're starting to supply other manufacturers who have seen that and gone, okay, it's not some weird fringe thing. It's something that, you know, there's genuine reasons to include into pet food. So, we're now supplying other pet food manufacturers, and we can actually supply volumes that are meaningful. You know, we don't need to be supplying thousands of tons, although certainly there are still pet food brands that we cannot supply because they do simply have that minimum volume requirement. So it was a long-winded answer, but I think we got there.
No, that's perfect. And I guess that kind of touches a little bit into one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about, which is about the scaling process of insect farming. So, you know, I had another guest that I spoke to earlier today, and he was also saying that scaling is a big issue. I guess the obvious question is, why is it such an issue? Like you mentioned at the beginning that you're doing vertical farming. And from my understanding, vertical farming is, for plants anyways, is a lot of it's using these microgreens, or producing microgreens, and they're doing it at a pretty large scale in certain places. So what's the difference, or what's the challenge, what's the hurdle to scale up manufacturing of insects for, let's just stick to pet food?
Yeah. So I think that it's multifaceted. When you first start doing this, I mean, we started with literally a handful of larvae that we bought from someone on, you know, eBay or something,
sure,
and grew
sure.
them in a compost heap. But you start with that, and you're just happy to get any sort of results, right? The flies lay eggs, great. The larvae are growing, fantastic, great. Yeah, but it's so labor intensive. Mm-hmm. But you don't care, because it's just such small scale at that stage. Oh, we'll fix that later. As you develop, you know, more sophisticated husbandry system, so the you know that vertical farming part, a lot of challenges. You realize, gosh, well, we can't have someone here every day, you know, 7 hours a day, just doing this one repetitive task.
Mm.
So you've got to strike a balance between automation and process simplicity. And it also comes down to where you are in the world. You know, if you're in a part of the world where labor is comparatively cheaper than Australia, you can get away with having people to do those jobs. But for here, you know, we can't pay someone a significant wage to do that sort of menial task. So you have to basically, what we did is made something super, super complicated and go, right, now what can we strip down? What can we pare back to make this as streamlined as possible in our production process? Then that's the process simplification. Then there's the automation as well. And again, insect farming, you think, okay, cows in a field, chickens in a coop, easy. You know, you just get a bigger paddock, get more animals, no worries. Not so easy with the insects, because we're working on this sort of weird small but large scale. You know, the insects are so small, but you need to do, you know, millions and millions or billions even of these insects to have the same effect. So it's easy, again, to go, oh, we're going to use robotics and all this fancy high-tech vision equipment and blah, blah, blah. And we sort of started going down that path initially, and we realized the sensors, the controls, the motors, all of these things, they're so sensitive and delicate. If you've got like a sterile environment, clean rooms, all of this sort of stuff, or you're producing a really high value product, okay, great. You know, that makes sense. Like in automotive industry, you can have six axis robots and all of this stuff. Very, very complicated, because you're making comparatively high value products. For us, you can't have that degree of automation, because it's going to break down. So much maintenance, so much, you know, work required to actually just keep that going. Sure. So you've got to basically pair it back to something much more industrialized, use very specific equipment. But even then, when you get into the weeds of it, when you really start to get down to it, you start looking at material composition, you know, the alloys of metals that you use, different types of transport. So, you know, conveying systems to get these materials out of the factory, and you have to get that right. Mm. You know, we made mistakes where we had a screw conveyor, for example, and it wore out within months. Because we didn't realize, but the material was so abrasive, apparently, that it was basically wearing out the flights in the screw. And we're going, oh, okay, great. So, but you can't replace the, you know, the screw in a screw conveyor every 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's things like that. And then, so that's just the sort of husbandry and production side. Then on the input side of things, you've really got to get your business model right. The how you actually set up your end-to-end process. So for us, we specifically target very specific ingredients. We don't use food waste. You know, that's a term thrown out there in the industry, and for certain things it seems to make sense. But for us, we target pre-consumer food byproducts, which is a way of saying very specific materials, right? So we don't take stuff from food courts or anything, or from homes or anything like that. And that doesn't relate so much to the scaling, more of the food safety. And I'd love to talk about that as well in a sort of separate question. But collecting those materials, like we can't go around collecting 10 kilos there, 50 kilos there, you know, so it's about understanding where are these large volumes of materials that we can get to then put into our process. Mm. So you've got your inputs, you've got the insect husbandry, but then there's the actual product manufacturing as well. So taking, you know, the live larvae and converting them, processing them into your finished products. And that's where a lot of real innovation is going around out of the world at the moment. And what you find is there is a lot of technology out there that is used in for similar processes. You know, protein meals from animal byproducts, oil and protein cake produced from seeds, things like that. But we can't exactly just take those processes and apply them to what we're doing. You get 80% of the way there, but it's sort of that 80-20 rule is then you've got to do the additional work to really adjust those processes and come up with that, with new processes as well for how you process our materials into the finished products. So if you use the exact same processes that you use from those industries, yeah, you get a good result, but you're getting a lot of wastage. You're getting a lot of material that you can't use that has value and has, you know, you want to actually be able to incorporate into something, but you can't actually extract properly. So that's where we've got partnerships with engineering companies here in Australia, who are making some really interesting equipment that we're now customizing, progressing, fine-tuning to suit our particular industry so that we can continue to process these materials at scale. You know, again, you can do a lot in a lab, right? You can easily have all your chemicals and different processes, but translating that to commercial industrial scale, that's the challenge.
Right, right. Very interesting. This is something that I'm realizing more and more as I interview more people in various industries. With each new emerging industry, right, there's obviously lessons learned, best practices that you could take from other industries, but it doesn't get you all the way there. And there's a lot of like innovation that needs to happen within your own industry before it can scale up. Very interesting. One question that I had with specific regards to the insects themselves. So you're giving them a more, I guess you could say, a homogeneous food source, not picking from all these small places. Does that have any impact on the quality of, well, maybe not the quality of the protein, but the flavor, for instance? You're testing all these things. I can imagine, and I'm such an amateur, I'm so naive to this, but I can imagine if you're getting, I don't know, like food waste from different households, the flavor of the end product is going to be a little bit different than if you're getting it from one maybe higher quality source. Am I wrong on this, or is that how things work with
less? No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that's a common misconception in the industry. People think that you can just feed them whatever and they'll grow. Yes, to a degree, but you're absolutely right that the end quality is going to be strongly affected. And yes, it could be the flavor. Yes, it could be the new nutrients. But it could also be the safety of the products as well. And that goes back to our very first thought process is there's so many ways that you can harness this, you know, nature's, you know, the little worker here for different processes. And you look in nature, I think that it's estimated that 80% of the world's animals are insects.
Right.
There's some crazy estimation that there's 5 million different insect species out there. And we really don't think about it, but they're doing a lot to actually maintain the planet. It just very obviously think about the critical role that bees play in our food production. If we didn't have bees, heaven forbid, we could not produce fruit and vegetables because they're pollinating the flowers.
Yeah.
But the other part of the insect kingdom is there for that recycling, breaking down of materials and then converting them into nutrients for bigger animals. So what that tells us is there's so many ways that we can use our insects, the black soldier fly larvae, and other people are using it more for breaking down organic waste. They're taking more what you would call food waste or even industrial, like manure, manure, cattle manure, chook manure, things like that. And they're breaking that down into more usable products. So you could definitely use the larvae just to create fertilizer products, you know, forgetting the protein whatsoever. You can use it to basically produce a very sort of raw, needs a bit more further processing, fertilizer product. You don't even think about extracting protein from that. For us, we see the value in protein and we feel like we've got a lot more knowledge in protein. And so that's our focus. And 100%, you know, what comes in is directly affects what comes out. So we did a lot of work on this over the years to understand how those inputs affect the outputs. And yes, it's the flavor, but that also comes down to how you process them. Mm. So different processing techniques and, you know, it's just simple things like how you cook the larvae, how you dry the larvae, directly affects the flavor, the texture, even the digestibility of the proteins.
Okay.
But if you don't get that diet right, or if you have a highly varying diet, yeah, you're going to see the nutrient profile of your products fluctuate quite a bit. And so that's what we learned, you know, speaking with industry is they can't work with something where week to week, your nutritional spec is changing. Obviously, there's, you know, some seasonal variation and, you know, this, okay, well, for the next 12 months, it's going to be this, that sort of fluctuation they can work with. But week to week, no. That's just, it's not feasible. So we had to develop processes and technology to get those inputs, which can be varying. You know, we don't, I'd love to say we've got the exact same material coming in every day. That's not practical. We don't. Mm. So we have to then tailor that processing, yes, to create basically a larvae feed. So we're doing feed blending where we're looking at nutrients, texture, all of these different things to make the ideal feedstock for our bugs.
Hmm. You mentioned briefly once or twice about the safety of the food that's coming out. One of my favorite all-time books is Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. I don't know if you've had the pleasure of reading that in your life. No, I highly recommend it. It looks at the kind of history of humankind and, you know, our interaction with religion, our interaction with paper, creating like communication for the very first time. But it also talks about animal husbandry and how all of the, I don't know about all, but certainly many of the different kind of diseases that we now have, like the flu, the cold, you know, COVID is a more recent example, but those came about through our close interaction with animal husbandry and the malpractices that we were using. So a long-winded way to get around to this food safety issue. Is there a similar concern or safety protocols in place to avoid, I don't know, like bioaccumulation of toxins or creation of new diseases, heaven forbid, you know, like things like that when you're considering creating these products from these bugs, from these insects, sorry.
Excellent question, Mark. I really like that one. So I feel like there is a lot of misconception out there and there's this ick factor because, oh, they're bugs, they're creepy crawly things. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not especially like a big fan of bugs. They're fascinating, but it's not a huge passion of mine. But even still, after you've, you know, had your hands in a tub of larvae and sure. you're in these fly husbandry areas, like they are pretty fascinating creatures, but you realize that they're very clean.
Mm.
And that's part of the reason why we chose to work with this specific species of insect. So going back to that early research that we looked at, there was evidence to suggest that the larvae were actually producing these natural antibiotic materials. So people, I think it was looking at staph, or some really, you know, strong diseases, and people were hypothesizing, and I hope that this can happen one day, but that you could extract these compounds from the larvae to actually treat these conditions. Mm. So when you compare that to traditional agriculture, which I'm not trying to say anything negative about, but it is interesting to note that, you know, you actively have to treat your animals to prevent them from getting diseases. I mean, even the most wild natural sort of animals, you still have to look after them to make sure they don't get sick or they don't get parasites or all of these different things.
Mm-hmm.
Our larvae look after themselves in that aspect. They produce those compounds which are actually reducing the microbial, negative microbial activity in their environments. So we don't have to add anything into the feed to sterilize it. They do it for us. So we're already starting with a product that is naturally clean. And you think about, you've got maggot therapy, leech therapy in hospitals. You know, there are medical maggots that will be applied to wounds, because they will only eat the necrotic tissue, and they basically clean the wound and you, you know, stop that from spreading. And this concept that they are somehow dirty or disease risen is completely unfounded. Now, that I'm not saying that necessarily applies to all insects, but certainly for ours, that's the case. So in terms of disease, microbial activity, pathogens like that, we've got a great starting point. Now, obviously, you've got to process them. You do have, it's a fresh meat product. We can't just say, oh, well, whatever, what happens after that doesn't matter. Of course it does. Yeah. You know, you have to make sure that once you cook them, prepare them, get them into the finished products, you have to have safety protocols there as well. But it's no different to any other protein manufacturing. Mm. The other one that you mentioned is that toxins are bioaccumulation, and it's unfortunate because that does seem to have been over amplified in its concern. But we do take it seriously, and that's why we look at very specific input materials. So by targeting not food waste in our case, but those clean pre-consumer food byproducts that are coming from factories, from food manufacturers, we start with a human-grade food product. So we don't have to worry about there being anything in there that could be toxic to humans or animals, because it's going to feed our humans to begin with. Obviously we have to make sure that those materials are clean. So we inspect that, and, you know, if there was something in there that could potentially be a hazard, we'd reject that. But again, I don't mean to be saying too many bad things about traditional agriculture, but our larvae eat better than your chickens and your fish. They literally get yesterday's stale bread, things like that. So we're starting with that really high quality, safe product to then produce very high quality proteins. We can be sure that, you know, we don't have to worry about that bioaccumulation because it's not present in high enough levels to begin with. But it is something that we think is very important. And overseas, there are more established, in Europe, certainly there are more established standards for that. So we are working to developing those standards here. And I'm involved with the Insect Protein Association of Australia. And that's certainly one thing that I'm very passionate about is making sure we've got some clear understanding of, you know, what's safe to use and where those products can go. But we're even now doing our own standard here in Australia that hasn't really been released yet, but it's our internal name is VPRO. And we are now communicating with the pet food manufacturers so that they can use that logo, that mark, in their communications with customers. So anyone that goes, picks up a bag of, you know, insect protein dog food, goes, okay, insect protein, that's a bit weird, but what's VPRO? Mm-hmm. They can look back on it and go, oh, I see. All right. So it's from these clean sources. It's very safe. That's how I know it's safe for my pet to consume.
Very interesting. To go back to the first point that you mentioned, like, I had no idea that there were antimicrobial properties of these insects. It's fascinating, really. Thanks for sharing that. It's another thing that I had absolutely no understanding of by this conversation.
It's so deep. Like, there's just so much breadth to this whole industry. Yeah. We are really just scratching the surface, and, you know, that's why we're so excited by all the work everyone's doing around the world to just make these discoveries.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. And I guess, like I mentioned before, any kind of emerging industry, emerging technology, the things that I focus on the most, there's just new discoveries, new things that you're coming into contact with all the time that make, I guess, the industry stand out a little bit more, and also just more interesting as you're getting involved in it. I did want to touch on the technologies a little bit more. I don't know if there was anything that you left out when we were discussing it before with regards to scaling up, or if there's like a need for, you were talking about the type of technologies that are out right now might not be super relevant for your industry. I guess there needs to be more kind of innovation and development for insect cultivation specifically, and I guess with that you might, I don't know, need smaller actuators to pick up the insects or move them around. I know it's kind of a vague question there, but could you touch more on the technology side that's going to be helpful and relevant for your business?
Yeah, definitely. When the industry was a bit more nascent, everyone was really a producer, technology company, manufacturer, you know, basically everyone did all of the stuff in-house. Mm. And that's the path that we took as well. What you're seeing now is some people in the industry are going, you know what? I'm not going to grow any bugs. I'm not going to process any products. We're actually going to design that technology for other producers to use. And so there's an emerging industry now of, I guess, engineering companies who are just producing that technology for the insect protein industry. And a lot of that seems to be centered around the black soldier fly larvae. But I think, people are looking at mealworms as well. And every industry sort of has a slightly different requirement for the husbandry piece, but also the end product processing. And so I think it's going to be very exciting now that a lot of manufacturers like us and globally are getting to the scales, those industrial scales that warrant having technology suppliers. That's going to open up so many more doors for people to solve specific industry problems. And I think there's a company in the UK who just, one of their main technologies is photographing and sampling the larvae as they hatch from the eggs. And wow. My actuators, forget about it. We're talking about like microscopic little things. Yeah. And their hypothesis is that that's a very efficient way to control that process. You need to make sure that you have sort of a farming unit, be it a container or however contain your bugs, your larvae. You need to make sure that you got the right amount of feed, but also the right amount of larvae in there to consume that feed. And so it's that very specific technology that's just basically perfecting that one part of the process. And you've got people looking at the sort of the automation side of it. You've got companies around the world like GEA, forgetting the name right now, but looking at that the end product manufacturing, but even now harnessing the oil and turning that into cosmeceutical products or soap. It's all that industry is now opening up as the volumes now are getting more consistent, more readily available. And people can look at those specific parts of the process.
Okay. I see that our time's dwindling down here a little bit. I have two other questions for you, and I should have asked this first one at the very beginning of the interview, which always happens. So you mentioned, black soldier flies is what you guys are working with. There are crickets. There are mealworms you mentioned. And I think there was another one that you mentioned that's slipped my mind. Do you know the rough percentages of like the total insect farming industry? Like what percent, like is black soldier fly like 90% and crickets 2% and mealworms, half a percent or something like that? Or what's the scale of the insects that we're looking at?
Yeah, from my understanding, the industry, black soldier fly larvae definitely dominate. They do a really good job for what we're trying to do. And there's, food wastage is just a massive problem globally. It's really astounding. If you saw just how much food gets wasted here in Australia and every part of the world, it's mind boggling. Yeah. So, it's not a unique problem. Every country everywhere has this problem. And so, you know, it's just an obvious thing for people to use. You know, the mealworms, I'd say maybe they're second behind that. And then third, I'd probably say is the crickets. And it comes down to probably the size of the problem, the size of the end industry. So mealworms and black soldier fly larvae, really great feed ingredient for livestock, for pets. I don't really think a lot of people are doing it for humans. Mm-hmm. But crickets definitely seems to be, from my understanding, a lot more human oriented, and maybe that's down to the value of the product or the price or the scale or something like that. But that's sort of my understanding of how it's broken down.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so you were talking about the scaling issue before, and specifically how there are now, I guess you call them like new OEMs or new suppliers of technologies that are enabling the scaling up of processes within businesses. I mean, that's really good to hear. Two, how do you see the next, say, 5 years in the insect farming industry shaping out? Like, clearly there are going to be more of these technology providers that are going to enable you guys to get over a lot of the challenges and the hurdles that you're maybe experiencing. I heard also that the yuck or the ick factor is going to become less and less as new generations become just more acquainted with insect powders and insect protein within foods. I think there's already a bit of a cultural shift with that over the last couple of years. Maybe not to the extent that you guys want, but I certainly see it. Do you see insect farming, maybe not in 5 years, but maybe 10, 20, 30, 50 years, dominating traditional animal husbandry or animal products? Or is this something that's going to remain within the, you know, pet food industry or pet food sectors?
We're not here to take over the world. We're not here to force everyone to eat bugs. You know, I think what I said at the start is, we just want to supply additional protein. You know, we want to make sure that the world has enough protein, and we're preventing wastage of these valuable materials. So, you know, our next 5 years looks like building out more of these factories across Australia and providing a real solution to food wastage. And for unfortunately, there are just not very many here. And maybe overseas that story is different, but certainly in Australia, you know, our options are few and far between. So our immediate goal is solve that problem and really start to give industry the volume it needs of the insect protein ingredients to take it seriously and start to become using it more regularly. You know, feed manufacturers, they've got a lot of options available. You know, they like sustainability, but to be honest, unless it's really right there, ready for them, a lot of people are sort of going, well, yeah, we've got other options for now. So we need to work really hard to show the industry, hey, this is real. We're not going away. We're not, you know, some this year, none next year. You know, we've got plenty of volume for you, and start doing that work, looking at the performance trials here in Australia, but also globally as well. We're seeing a lot of industry really growing around the world. In Europe, I think, is the epicenter at the moment of insect production. But in the States and Canada as well, we're seeing that now start to increase in scale. So I think it's going to become something that people take a lot more seriously on our journey. Niche, small scale, you know, those are the sort of words that people were using. But now people are realizing, oh, okay, so you can get this in serious volumes. It's not a few kilos here and there. It's hundreds and thousands of tons, which is what people need. And I think as well, that acceptance part, you know, we don't have to create an artificial narrative. We produce products that are just genuinely good.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that now with people that are buying our fertilizer products. They're coming to us with feedback that we didn't even know about our products. Right. So we don't have to come up with some elaborate rationalization of why you should use these insect products. It's just good. So I think a lot more people are going to realize that just simply through exposure. You know, they're going to see, you know, their neighbor next door. Oh, they applied the insect manure on their lawn and the color just exploded.
Right.
They're going to see, you know, so-and-so feeding their dog an insect protein product and go, what's that? Oh, wow, that smells really pleasant. Oh, the dog loves it. Oh, their coat health has improved, or their stool quality is improved, or something like that. So I think the quality of the product is going to sell themselves, and people are going to become a lot more aware of that. And over the long term, you know, we're trying to create a whole new category of products, much like where you have certified organic products. You know, an idea in the long run might be certified sustainable.
Mm.
And so people can have confidence that the product, the feed, the fertilizer, whatever it is that they're using, has been made in a way that's sustainable, good for the earth, and actually has this plethora of benefits across the whole value chain.
It's really interesting. I'll have to have you back on in a couple of years to see how things have changed.
Please.
And what the scale of the industry will have become. It's very, and who knows, maybe there'll be like some, probably not, but there'll be some new insect that'll be found to, you know, that'll take over black soldier flies or mealworms or be better than what's available, but probably not.
Oh, look, I think people are looking at it all the time, and there are bugs that can consume plastics, polystyrenes,
yeah.
All of these different things. I mean, it's crazy. And I really hope that it becomes, you know, if we're only using 3 out of the 5 million insect species, I think there's probably a few out there that can, okay, that can do some more.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I'll have to keep my eyes and ears open and maybe bring on another guest. I think the insect eating plastics is a really fascinating use case, especially as, you know, I lived in Europe for 7 years, so trying to move away from plastics as much as possible. I think Europe's the number one place there, so definitely having some insects that do that would be highly relevant over there. But that, sure. That's another topic for another day. Martin, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast. Where, apart from your website, I want to put this on the show notes. So where can people follow you, pay attention to what Viridian's up to? What are the socials that people can look into?
Look, I got to be honest, we're a bit shy. Okay. We like to give the limelight to our customers. So maybe we can actually share with you some of the customers that are using our products. But you know, we're putting our stuff out on LinkedIn on the website. But honestly, yeah, we are not very active on social media. I can share with you our dog treat brand. That's got a bit more of a consumer presence. But honestly, we're just in the background working hard, doing the good things. And yeah.
No worries. Well, I'll have at least your LinkedIn and website up on the show notes so people can check it out. Great. Well, thanks again for coming on, Martin. It was a pleasure.
Really enjoyed myself. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Mark. And yeah, I look forward to speaking again in a couple of years.
Terrific.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Well, thanks for listening to this week's Future Tech and Foresight podcast. If you like what you've heard here, there are, of course, a number of ways that you can support the podcast. The best way would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give a rating on Spotify, which you can find a step-by-step explanation for on the futuretechandforesight.com website. Alternatively, feel free to leave a comment either on the episode show notes or the YouTube channel where you can see video recordings of the interviews. And finally, if you are part of an organization that is aware of the disruptive and transformational impact that emerging and future technologies will bring and want to know more, please get in touch to hear about the strategic foresight services that we offer and how we can help future-proof your organization and take advantage of the phenomenal opportunities available to survive and thrive in the future.
A lot of future shock people and future shock institutions in our society are simply overwhelmed.
Once there is superintelligence, the fate of humanity may depend on what the superintelligence does.
Science fact is catching up to science fiction.
The first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention that humanity needs to make.
The only scarcity that will exist in the future is that which we decide to create ourselves as humans.
Within a 10-year design revolution, we can have all humanity living the highest and living anybody's ever known.
Progress is accelerating at an exponential pace, and it's going to reach a point where progress is so fast it's going to be a singularity.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens.
Every single headline points to the birth pangs of a Type 1 civilization.